And people just weren't giving at his church, and he got pretty desperate, and he did something that I don't recommend doing. He started using hypnosis. He started trying to use, you know, hypnotic techniques in his messages. What he would do is he would come to toward the end of his sermon, he would start talking more slowly, you know, as he's kind of winding things down. And he actually got out this watch, and he has the watch on his finger, you know, the whole bit, and it's like the watch is going back and forth, and he's kind of winding things down. At the very end of his sermon, he would say, "Give." And people just started giving. They just started opening up their wallets and putting money in the basket as it was going by. And so, you know, money starts to come into the church. And everything is going really well. He starts doing this week after week after week until it all fell apart one week when he was kind of coming to the end of his sermon. And he's kind of winding everything down. You know, he's got the watch going and everything. He's about to come to the end of his message. And the watch is going back and forth. And I guess he loses concentration for a second. And he bangs the watch into the side of his pulpit. The watch makes this loud clanging sound and falls to the ground, and he looks at the congregation and says, "Crap." All of us face challenges in our church. You got challenges in your church. I got challenges in my church. I started off 21 years ago at our church. Started working just out of high school because I didn't have any other options. I was terrible at high school. And I didn't want to go to college. I hated homework in high school, and I thought if I didn't like it there, it won't be any better for me in college. So I didn't know what I was going to do, and my dad said, "Well, why don't you just come to work at the church?" And so he put me in like this really great job at the church, just started me off right at the top laying sod outside the church, you know, just taking care of the grounds and all that kind of stuff. Did that for a couple of weeks. I was absolutely terrible at it, and so he moved me into our television department, which we had at that time. And I kind of started working at the bottom in our television department and learned a lot of different things about TV, started moving into graphic design, got into worship, all this kind of stuff. Before, there was a creative ministry at churches. Every church now almost has a creative ministry. This was before any of that. Got in the middle of 180, which was our youth ministry, and it exploded at the time. Just was a part of a lot of different things that happened at our church, particularly in the field of creativity and in the arts. And for the past 10 years at our church, I was the arts director. I headed up everything that we did on our weekend services, putting together the worship, any creative presentations, all that stuff that we did, the look and feel of our church, website, all that kind of stuff, marketing, all of that, kind of looked after all of that. And then the last year or so transitioned into a different role. Now I'm the executive pastor at our church, which means basically I'm looking after our entire staff, overseeing a lot of the operations of the church and sort of what we do day to day. But here's what I found, that a lot of the skills that I learned as it pertains to creativity in the arts world, the creative process, the ability to solve problems, all of those things are carried over into what I'm doing today at the executive level, leading our staff and our teams in that way. The problems are different, but the method is the same. And so what I want to do is just spend the next 30 minutes or so talking about the creative process and kind of how the creative process works and how you can apply it in your situation. Some of you are already thinking, "Well, that's not me. I don't do that. You know, I'm not in the arts. I'm, you know, hopefully my arts team is here or whatever, but that's not really my thing." But what I want to do is just talk about it in this way. I want to talk about and deal with four misconceptions that people have when it comes to creativity. So I'll tell you kind of what creativity isn't, and then we'll talk about kind of what it is. So the first misconception that most people have about creativity is this. Creativity is not art. It's solving a problem. So many people write themselves off and say, "I am not creative," because they feel like that they're not an artist. Well, here's the thing. Artists are creative, and they can be creative. Not all artists are all that creative, but everybody has a spark of creativity. Creativity is not really just about being able to paint or being able to draw or being able to sculpt. And many people, that's what they think. They think because they don't possess any of those skills that they have no creative capacity. I hear people say all the time, "I don't have a creative bone in my body." What they mean is that I'm not an artist. I don't understand film. I'm not into graphic design. I'm not a musician. I don't do kind of what those kinds of people do. Therefore, I have no creativity. Well, it's just simply not true. The scripture says this. It says that we, every one of us, were made in the image of God. And this is interesting. When you first read about God, the very first description that we have of God, it says, "In the beginning, God created." The very first thing that we know about God is that he's a creator. could have started off any way he wanted. In the beginning, God is love. In the beginning, God is truth. In the beginning, God is this. God is that. All of those would have been true. But he didn't. He started off by saying, in the beginning, God created. And then, of course, later on it says that God made man in his own image and in his own likeness. So that means that every single one of us possesses a spark of creativity. And what creativity has to do with more is solving a problem. Whenever there's a challenge that you face, whenever there's a particular challenge or a problem or obstacle that you come up against, creativity is the ability to find a solution where one doesn't seem to readily present itself. I learned this whenever I was a teenager. We have a summer camp called Dry Gulch USA. It's about an hour away from our church. And many of us growing up, especially a lot of us on staff now, we were counselors out there when we were teenagers. And so I went out there to be a counselor probably when I was 16, 17 years old. I'm supposed to look after about a dozen, 8 to 12-year-old boys. I was their counselor. And what you have to do is you have to watch them, 24 hours a day for a week. They arrive on Sunday afternoon. They don't leave. They don't go home until Saturday afternoon. So think about it. You're 17 years old. You're with about a dozen 8 to 12-year-old boys 24 hours a day. You're always with them for an entire week. And this goes on week after week after week after week after week. And pretty soon, you just kind of start to go nuts. You're just, you're ready to just have a break away from kids. The trouble is you had almost no break, because you'd get about less than 24 hours to yourself, and about half that time you were going to be asleep. So you had almost no time to just be by yourself and do whatever it was that you want to do. And to make matters worse, one of the challenges that we had was that we had to clean the bunkhouse. So we had all these kids in the bunkhouse, and then they would go, and our job as counselors was to go in and clean and wipe down the walls, wipe down the mattresses, disinfect everything. You had to clean everything and get it ready for the next group of kids. And by yourself, this would take, 2-3 hours. And so, the counselors, all of us, we'd be in our bunks on Saturday afternoon. All the kids go home, and then we're in there scrubbing away, cleaning. And then it's late afternoon, evening. By the time you're finally done, you get enough time. You could drive into Tulsa, grab a meal, have a little bit of fun, and then you had to turn back around. You go to sleep. You wake up the next morning, and the kids are coming back again. And, pretty soon, I'm kind of going insane, pulling my hair out, just having these kids around me all the time. So I got to come up with a solution to kind of maximize my time off. So I had this idea. I told all my kids, all my boys one night, I said, guys, tonight we're going to have a party. What we're going to do is we're going to play a game. And of course, when you talk to, young kids, if you talk in the right tone of voice, you can kind of convince them to do everything, anything. So I said, guys, here's what we're going to do. We're going to play Clean the Bunkhouse. It's going to be the best game that you've ever played. And what I did is I put my kids to work. I had the boys cleaning the showers. They hated the game, but I made them play it anyway. I made them clean the showers, the toilets, the sinks, wipe down the mattresses. Now, here was the side effect of wiping down the mattresses, is that you couldn't sleep on them after you'd wiped them down. So we were having a slumber party by sleeping on the floor that night. And then you were going to sleep in what you're going to wear home the next day, because we're packing up your suitcase and we're putting it on the porch tonight. And so the kids went to bed sleeping in the clothes they were going to wear home the next day. And then the next morning we would all wake up, and I would walk out, we'd take them to breakfast, and I would lock the door, and no one went back in the bunk again for the rest of the day. I was done before everybody else. That is creativity. It's learning to solve a problem. I maybe there's a little bit of child abuse in there. I'll let you be the judge of that. But I was faced with a challenge, and I found a way to overcome that challenge. You possess the same ability. Every single one of us possesses this ability. You might not have it in the area of the arts. Maybe your creative spark has to do with accounting. Maybe your creative spark has to do with leading in a church context. Maybe it has to do with overseeing a particular operation of your church. But you have a spark of creativity. I believe that we're given this by God. Here's an area that is huge in. It's parenting. I have 5 kids, so I know what I'm talking about with this. Parenting brings unique challenges, and not every kid is the same. And so you're trying to figure out, okay, what works with my son doesn't work with my daughter, doesn't work with my second son or whatever. I mean, there's all of these challenges that you face. And creativity is the ability to look at those things and say, okay, how am I going to solve this problem? How am I going to get around this? But here's the thing. As long as you see yourself as being a person who isn't creative, you won't see the possibilities and the solutions that are all around you. And the church should be the most creative organization on planet Earth. But it's filled with people who feel like that that's only for the arts people. That the arts people are the only ones among us who can be creative. When the truth is that all of us are given this gift by God of creativity. We all possess that divine spark. That's the first misconception about creativity. The second misconception is this. Creativity is not magic. It's a discipline. Creativity is not magic, it's a discipline. Here's what I mean by that. I saw a movie years ago. I don't know if any of you have seen this movie. Christopher Nolan made an interesting movie. It's called The Prestige. I read this book. It's about magicians. I read it before I saw the movie. It's an interesting movie. I think the book is even more interesting. It deals a lot with magic. I was kind of fascinated by the topic. So I got the book and I read it. And in the book and in the movie, it's the same thing. There's an interesting story of an interesting little aside of this magician, this old Chinese guy who did this incredible trick. And these magicians in the book and in the movie, they're trying to figure out how each other does their tricks. That's sort of the whole idea, is they're trying to figure out each other's magic trick. And this one old Chinese guy did this trick that this magician had always, it had always baffled him how he was able to do this trick. What he was able to do was he was able to kind of make this giant fishbowl appear sort of out of thin air. And so it was like he had a table like this, and he would kind of get out this veil or whatever, and he would have it there, and he would pull it up, and wow, where there had been no big fishbowl, there was this fishbowl. And so this magician, he's studying this guy, trying to figure out how he has done this, how he's done this trick. And he's watching him, and he can't seem to figure it out until one night he discovers the secret of this guy's trick. This old guy, he kind of walked around like this all the time and just kind of had a hunch. I mean, he was older, so it seemed natural. This was the way that he walked. But just for a moment, one night, this other magician spots this old Chinese guy walking completely differently. He sees him walking straight up and in a more normal way. And in that split second, he discovered how he did his trick. He figured out that he was holding the fishbowl between his knees for the entire show. He wore a long gown and a traditional kind of Chinese gown, and so he had it between his knees. And so he would walk like this, and he did it when he had the fishbowl there and when he didn't, to maintain the illusion so that it didn't seem so weird to see him walking like this because, you know, he's carrying a fishbowl between his legs. Now here's why that's relevant. Here's why this matters. Because when we see something magical, something that we're like, how do you do that? How does this happen? How do they pull this off? And all of us are around different organizations, different people that we consider to be magical. Songwriters, pastors, business leaders. They seem to be so gifted at what they do. They seem to be so amazing that we find ourselves asking this question, how do they do that? And the assumption is this, that the process that created whatever it is that they do, the process or whatever it was that gave them their gift or their ability was magical, just like what we see. That behind the scenes is just as magical as the thing that we are enamored with. When the truth is, what looks like magic is really just a discipline. What looks amazing, wow, a fishbowl appears out of nowhere. It seems so incredible. It seems so mysterious. When it's not sexy at all, it's carrying a fishbowl between your knees for an hour or so, which is not easy to do. But if you're disciplined enough to go through the process, you can make something that appears to be magical. Now, here's why this matters, because so many of us write ourselves off. We see something that seems magical, and we go, wow, that's amazing. How do they make a church? How do you get a church like that? How do you speak like that? How do you lead like that? It must be some kind of, you must know something that I don't know. You must have access to information that I don't have. You must be working in another level than what I'm working at. And here's why that's so dangerous. Because it lets us off the hook. If you have access to information and to things that I don't have access to, if you know a secret way that I don't know, then I can't be held accountable for not doing what you do. I can't be held accountable for not producing the same kind of results that you produce. I get asked this question all the time. Whit, what inspires you? Where do you find your inspiration? I always love this one. Sometimes I get this question. Whit, where do you get your ideas? I think that's interesting because it's as if they think I have access to some inspiration or idea website that they don't have access to. I used to answer sarcastically. I'm a sarcastic person, and so I used to sometimes answer this question sarcastically by telling people that, well, what happens is when your church reaches a certain size, there's a secret organization that sends you a link to a special hidden website. And on that website is the most wonderful, amazing ideas for your church. They're incredible. And all you have to do is click on this website, and you'll see these incredible things. And you just take one of them and you just use it. And that's how we do what we do. Why is this so dangerous? Because if you think like this, what you're saying is, I don't have access to what you have access to. Therefore, I can't be held accountable for not doing as much with my gift as you've done with yours. It's a discipline. You have to work at it every day. The most talented people, the most amazing people that you've ever seen are the people who just simply work harder than you do. And they've learned to work smarter. They've learned to maximize their time. Instead of hanging out on Facebook late at night, they're reading a book. They're learning. They're taking in more information. They're applying the information that they have. They're learning from the experiences of the past. They're constantly working at their craft. I heard this story about Joel Houston. A few years back, I don't know Joel, I've bumped into him a couple of times, we're not friends or anything, but I heard this story about him, and I thought it was interesting. He was in New York City, of course, I guess he lives there now, and he was, I guess, out on the streets, and he got mugged, and someone took his cell phone. I heard about this. They took his cell phone, and they were stealing, you know, whatever they could get from him, and he was fine with them having his money or whatever, that, you know, whatever, you can have this, but just, would you not steal my cell phone? And he was apparently, like, pleading with this mugger to not take his cell phone. Why? Because on his cell phone were hundreds of song ideas, just fragments of little pieces of songs that he had stored away on his cell phone, you know, just probably recording things on there, writing lyric ideas, whatever, were just all on his cell phone. I thought that was interesting. Hundreds of song ideas. How many of you have hundreds of anything? I heard Bill Hybels say one time, he said that the best communicators that he's ever known keep a file, a running file of just little sermon bits, just anything that might give them an idea, that might turn into an idea one day, might turn into a full-fledged sermon one day. They just keep it in a file. They just file it away. They're constantly searching, constantly looking. It's just a discipline. It's a habit that they get into. We want to write songs like Joel Houston, but what we think is that the way the great songs come is that they come like you roll out of bed one night and you're struck with an amazing idea, and wow, there it is. I just wrote the world's best worship song. This is going to be incredible. What we don't know is how many hundreds of songs, maybe thousands of songs, are written in between the hits. The songs that you hear, how many hundreds of songs you never heard because they were terrible. Seriously, that's the thing. This is the thing about creativity. Don't miss this. For every bit of gold that you pull out, there's so much junk and rock and dirt all around it. The problem is most people don't dig enough. They think they want to go into the mine and come out with gold every time. And guess what? It doesn't work that way for anybody. I've been around some of the most creative people in the world. It doesn't work that way for anybody. You have to keep working, keep working, keep working. And if you go into the mine enough, eventually, guess what? Any fool's going to come out with gold if you just keep working at it. The problem is we're not disciplined enough to stay with it, and we think that the process works magically for the few who are gifted with that ability. That's not true. You got to work at it. Third misconception. Creativity is not the absence of limitations. It's leveraging your limitations. This is a huge excuse. So many of us feel like, well, I can't be creative until we have a certain budget. I can't be creative until we have enough money to buy those lights or get that sound system or to have those kinds of people on our staff. Until our team is a certain size, that's when our creativity will really kick in. So many of us, we limit ourselves. We say, well, creativity doesn't happen until you reach a certain level, when it's hogwash. If creativity is solving a problem, then the problem that's in front of you is the one you got to solve. As long as you're telling yourself, we can't do it until, you'll never get anything done. Nothing will ever happen. All of us face limitations. Let me just show of hands. How many of you are senior leaders in this room? You're the senior pastor at your church. Just raise your hand. Right? How many of you, your support staff? Raise your hand. A lot of support staff. That would be me. Support staff at my church. Here's one of the challenges that I think those of us who are not in senior leadership face. We face this problem of that the leader I work for is my limitation. That the leader if I could only get, or the environment that I work in is my limitation. That somehow, if circumstances could be different, if I could just get them to see it in a different way. I bump into people all the time, especially young people, sons, daughters of pastors who are struggling, challenged, or are feeling frustrated with their situation, feeling like they can't move forward until a particular problem is solved. And they feel like that, and I used to feel this way. I went through this a lot. I felt like that if I was in the right situation, that if things were perfect, that I wouldn't feel this kind of frustration that I feel. But I started thinking about it, and I started realizing that frustration is just human nature, that no matter what situation I'm in, I'm always going to be frustrated with something. There's always going to be a limitation. Orson Welles said this. He said that the absence of limitations is the enemy of art. In other words, we think that the artists, the creatives, that the best thing for us is a blank canvas, that all possibilities are really what we could really unlock our creativity is if we had no limitations, when actually the reverse is true. That it's the limitations that force creativity, because it's the limitations that create the problems, that create the challenges, and we have to find a way to work around them, because after all, remember, that's what creativity is. When you have no limitations, you have no problems. Thus, there is no need for creativity. Limitations force creativity on us. So I started thinking about this, and I started thinking about just a couple different situations from Scripture. I started thinking about Adam and Eve. Perfect environment. Think about this. Perfect environment, right? I mean, you're in a garden, you're naked, there's no children. What could go wrong? They screwed it up. Right? Think about it. Perfect environment. Still not satisfied. Everything they needed. Still, maybe there's something more. Maybe we should eat this fruit. I think there's something else out there. It's human nature. It's just part of how we're wired up. Perfect environment. Then I started thinking about this. Peter, Judas, perfect leader. Peter rebuked Jesus, said, "You don't need to go to the cross. Remember this?" And then Jesus said, "Get behind me, Satan." You remember this story? Peter didn't think Jesus was going about it the right way. Frustrated with his leader. Judas, so much so that he betrayed him. Perfect leader, still frustrated. Think about it. So we think that if I had the perfect environment, if I had everything that I need, I wouldn't feel this way. Not true. If I had the perfect leader, if you would just lead me, if you could just lead a little bit better, I wouldn't be as frustrated as I am. Also, not true. These are just excuses for not solving the problems that are in front of you. As long as you tell yourself that you'll only be creative, that you'll only do what needs to be done, whenever those limitations are removed, you're just going to be sitting around waiting and waiting and waiting, and God will never do anything with you. You'll just be stuck in that spot. When you realize that no situation is perfect, no leader is perfect, and you're going to do what you can do with what you have, with what's in your hand right now, even if that's a couple of candles and a guitar, you're going to make the most of it because that's what you have. That's what creativity is. It's learning to leverage what you have, not be frustrated by it and become stagnated with the limitations that you're facing. That's the third one. Fourth one is this, and this is the last one. Creativity is not original; it's authentic. Here's why this is important. So many people think that the most creative thinkers are the people who come up with things from thin air. The way they think of creativity, and so many of us do, I used to think of it this way as well, is that creativity is about discovery. That you're looking, you're seeking for some new thing, something that's never been done before, some brand new thing. when really creativity is about connection. For us, creativity is about finding connections between things that already exist, making connections. Let me explain kind of how this works. Our creativity and God's creativity are different. Remember, in the beginning, God made the heavens and the earth. So God made something from nothing. God's creativity is different. It's on another level than our creativity, as it should be. He's God. He can make things from nothing. That's the amazing thing about God. It wasn't like God said, you know, I was thinking, I saw this universe, you know, the other day, and I thought I would make one like it, or I would make a planet like one I saw, you know, a few billion years ago. No, God's able to come up with things from nothing. He makes things from nothing. That's how God works. But then God puts Adam and Eve in the garden, and he says, now you make things from the things that have already been made. And that's what our job is. Our job is not to make something from nothing. Our job is to make things from what has already been made, which means that our job is not so much about discovery or inventing whole new things. Our job is about connecting things together that maybe didn't seem to go together in the first place, but wow, when I sit and think about it, these two things would work beautifully together, and I think they would work in our context. It's a great example of this. There's a choreographer, director, is a famous guy named Bob Fosse. I don't know if anybody knows who Bob Fosse is, but Bob Fosse directed a lot of movies, won Academy Awards. He was a dancer, a choreographer, amazing guy. And Bob Fosse appears in a movie back in the 70s. I think this is 1978 this movie was released. It's called The Little Prince. And it's kind of a strange film if you've ever seen it. I remember seeing it on the Disney Channel when I was a kid and being kind of creeped out by it. But I remember this scene. Bob Fosse, he's dancing and he's playing. He's supposed to be a snake. And so it's weird. It's before they had, you know, a bunch of computer-generated effects and all that kind of stuff. So it was sort of cut between this snake and then Bob dancing. And so anyways, it's this interesting scene. I want to show it to you and let you see this. This is Bob Fosse dancing. The number is called A Snake in the Grass. I kind of edited some of it together, so some of the music seems a little bit weird, but this is him dancing. So check this out.
So any day or night, wherever you are, if you would like to take a trip to a star, the quickest transportation yet known to man is none other than a snake in the grass. Say goodbye to all of your friends.
Yeah, so not necessarily remarkable, but that's a scene from The Little Prince. Now, I want to show you the same clip, different music, see if you see it a different way. Watch this. Creativity is about connection. Michael Jackson talked openly about the influence of Bob Fosse on his life and in his dancing. This, in my mind, doesn't take away from the genius of Michael Jackson. Michael Jackson was a creative genius. What he was able to do, though, it wasn't about discovery, it was about connection. He's not looking to invent something that's never been done before. He's looking to do something that's never been done before in a different context. He's looking to take something that's been done over here and do it in a different way. Now, here's what's crazy. When you see that, like in hindsight, after everything we've seen of Michael Jackson, we say, oh, he just totally ripped that guy off. And that's how most people interpret this video. You're looking at it through the lens of history, of how wildly successful he was with all of those dance moves. If I was to have shown you this clip in the 70s and said, what do you think? Can we use this for kind of a new way of dancing? None of you would have said yes. The genius of Michael Jackson was that he was able to see it in that context and go, but if I change it, if I tweak it, if I do it through using my personality, my gifts, I can turn it into, I can transform it into something new and bold and different that had never been done before. But it wasn't original necessarily, it was just authentic. It was not completely new, it was just new through him. You know what I'm saying? And that's what you're trying to do, is not things that are just completely new that had never done before. It's about being new through you. Your job in creative thinking is to take things and connect them. This is why awareness is huge. So again, to answer the question, where do you get your ideas? What inspires you? Well, the answer is, what doesn't inspire me? It's all around. Look, you just have to open your eyes to see all of the different pieces of inspiration that are all around you. When I walk into a room, one of the first things I do is just look at the carpet, look at the ceiling, look at the lights, look at the walls. How do I feel when I'm in this room? Do I feel good? Do I not feel good? If I feel good, why do I feel good? If I don't feel good, why do I not feel good? Why? Because those are lessons that I can learn. If I start thinking about that stuff, I can start to deconstruct the way that I feel. For those of you who work in the arts world, guys, this is your job. You work like you paint with feelings. That's what you do. You're helping people to feel certain things. Why does certain music make me feel a certain way? Why does certain lighting make me feel a certain way? Can I leverage that? Can I use it? Because this is what we do. We're creating experiences. We're creating environments for people to see and experience God. That's what our job is. And so you want to have your antenna up all of the time, looking for different connections, looking for different things. And here's what I've noticed, that the more I do this, the more God brings things to my attention. The more I see things, I see something in one context and I go, ooh, I could use that in another way. I could take that from over there and I could apply it over here. But many of us, we're walking around just waiting for lightning to strike our brains, thinking that's how real inspiration works, when real inspiration is so much more subtle than that. That's why there's not a website that I could give you, or a magazine I could tell you to read, or a blog that you should subscribe to necessarily, although there are all kinds of great things out there. I couldn't recommend one particular thing because there's so much of it. You never know where these ideas are coming from. The trick is to learn to put your antenna up so that you're constantly aware, constantly listening, constantly watching. How many sermon ideas do you get just going through everyday life? Oh, wow, that tells me a little something about God. Ooh, wow, I could use that to teach my kids a lesson about life. I'm constantly doing those things. That's what makes for the best teachers of the people. That's what Jesus did. He was able to take things out of their day-to-day context and say, hey, guys, the kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed or all kinds of different things that Jesus would use. Again, you see this all through the Gospels. You see him using just different illustrations all the time. Why does he do this? Because it's things that people could relate to. Again, you're taking things from one context and applying them to another. That's what creativity is. That's how creative communication works. That's how creativity works on every level. It's not so much about discovery. It's about connection. Thanks. God bless.